This is CliffCentral.com.
That's it. In particular, I love that song. Major Lazer, Nasty C. It's very nice. Friday morning, we've got some great stuff on CliffCentral.com for you today. We've got the Just Now Comedy Show. We've got Sex Talk with John T.
Oh. But also, Gareth, we've got good stuff from the week. When Gord came in on Wednesday, there were some great topics to go through. So if you missed any of that, obviously you can pick up on the podcast.
Yes.
So much. So much for your weekend.
And we had our movie last night, which opens in cinemas this evening for everybody else. So if you missed out on our special premiere of The Shape of Water last night, then you can still get tickets today. Opens countrywide. It's Guillermo del Toro. It's a beautifully made movie. I've got to say, it's almost like a work of art. Do you agree, Sia?
The way it's shot, the way certain scenes are depicted, I loved it.
It's like old school cinema.
Yeah.
But with a very relatable kind of love story. It was just good. It was really good. I didn't think it would be. I had no expectations. But I walked out happy.
And the artistic elements as well. There are certain things, and this isn't like a spoiler alert, but one of the characters is mute, and how that is played out, and the certain scenes where it's enhanced. Yeah, just a lot.
It's good. The other actress who played Zelda?
Octavia Spencer.
She's great.
She's good. The Help.
She's really good. Why does she always end up being the Help? She was the Help in this movie, too. But she's such a good actress.
Yes. So many different elements. If you're drama, if you're into
bad
suspense.
Guy, it's incredible.
If you're into comedy.
It's all very good.
It's all of that.
Okay. We got to get cracking with some things in the news today. There are a lot of news headlines going around. A lot of people still talking about that school in the Vaal where yesterday a petrol bomb was thrown. Now, you know, I said this. Yesterday, the thing that bothers me the most is that we're setting such a bad example for children. Children are going to grow up one day and go, well, let me think how I deal with conflict or how I deal with potentially difficult situations. Oh, I remember, the adults throw petrol bombs at each other. That's great. Let's start there. I feel that this is just so, it's so upsetting. It's the lowest and most debased kind of humanity, and I'm disappointed for the children who want to attend that school and for the children who are attending that school, because I'm absolutely sure they could have sat together and figured this out a lot better than the adults. And the adults should be embarrassed. In particular, the adults, in particular. The adults who decided to protest burnt tires and a petrol bomb outside a school. Really?
Well, you know, journalists are going to be keeping a close eye on that school again today, because now the other parents have said, well, today, if those protesters come back, we're waiting for them with weapons. So
see, now, just
fire
get, just
upon fire upon fire. So,
but let's not forget, the whole reason we have this situation is, first of all, because a court of law has decided that a certain course of action must be followed, and the people who are protesting don't like that suggested course of action. Second of all, we've discovered that the principals of two schools that are right next door to this school were intimidated by the Department of Education in order to victimize this Afrikaans school. Yeah. They wanted to make an example of this Afrikaans school, who were quietly going about their business educating their kids. The third problem that we have here is that the township schools in that area are so bad because they run so badly, and the unions have them by the throat, that the kids who go to those schools get a substandard education. So you can't blame the kids, and you can't blame the parents. You can blame COSAS, SADTU, and the EFF. Because it seems when the EFF gets a ruling in their favor, they love it. Then the judiciary is fantastic, and they thank God for them. They're the saviors of the country. And you've got Dalimpofu Gaitobi. Can't remember his first name now. He was also on My Case. And they're celebrating and they're dancing around and they're thinking it's the greatest thing ever when the judiciary votes in their favor. Minute it doesn't go their way, oh, clearly we have to protest and this is bad. And this is This is victimization of an Afrikaans school by the Gauteng Department of Education. Banyaza Lesufi and his department told the principals of the English schools who had space, tell us we don't have space. Say we don't have space so that we can make an example of this Afrikaans school. Do you know how many schools in South Africa are Afrikaans language schools? 5% of the total. So if 5%, I mean, there are probably more Catholic schools. So let's stop this nonsense.
But exactly, this is all it is. It's like you're fighting against racism, but you're burning tires and shouting, kill white people. Like, how does that work out?
No irony there, Ben. This is the EFF. They have different rules. Anyway, leave it alone. It just drives me mad because it's not fair. It's not equitable. It's not about everybody being equal. In fact, it's about victimizing a certain group in this case. And the people who lose are not Afrikaners or white people or racists. It's kids. And the minute kids are losing, on both sides, black kids who wanted to go to that school, English-speaking, nobody said black kids. It's English-speaking kids who want to go to that school. God alone knows how well that'll go, because if you're taught in Afrikaans and your first language is English, it's not likely that you're going to do very well. But let's put that aside for the second, for the moment. The Gauteng Education Department hasn't built enough schools. They haven't looked after the fact that we are running behind. What education we do give people is so substandard that they come out illiterate and innumerate. The problem here, the protest should have happened outside the Gauteng Department of Education, right? They're the people responsible for this fuck-up. Anyway, leave it alone.
Mm.
I'm not getting involved. This is obviously a major issue for the people in the Vaal, for parents of children. I hope it gets sorted out and the kids get school. That's all I care about. What else is in the news?
Ben?
I don't know, Mabs. I do sports and I do other things.
Okay, well, I'll tell you something.
Do other things.
I'll tell you what this is. There are women who are embracing facial hair.
Okay, now.
Have you heard about this?
Well, it seems, if you actually dig around a bit, it could actually be happening for not just this week, not just last month. It seems like there's an undercurrent of women being trying to do this for quite some time now.
Have been trying to do it?
Well, obviously they can do it, but I mean, when it becomes a mainstream thing, when people aren't like throwing fruit at them and all, you know, shouting at them at train stations and stuff.
Because usually the women with beards were in circuses.
Yeah, because you know the old saying, the bearded lady, it was where you took your kids to and everyone would, like, screamed and ran away because there was a woman with a beard. Can you imagine?
Well, there's one woman in particular. She is a model.
In particular.
Her name is Harnam Kaur. Mm-hmm. And she actually suffers from polycystic ovarian syndrome. And it is a condition that is thought to affect around 1 in 5 women in the UK. And one of its symptoms is excessive hair growth.
Yeah, she's got a big beard.
Yes, so she has grown a big beard, very well-kept beard at that. And she is now gaining a lot of attention through her Instagram account for, you know, embracing her beard. And now she's also a model. So a lot of people are also interested in, you know, getting her to work with them. And, you know, a lot of people are reacting to her story saying, oh, well, okay, then do your thing.
She's got a tattoo on her leg of her face, heavily bearded face.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite a tattoo. I mean, the likeness is uncanny.
Well, she's definitely she's different committed. Looking. You can look her up on Instagram, Harnam, Harnaam, and the surname Kaur, Kaur. Yeah, Harnam is Kaur. So here she is. She's talking about body confidence.
Syndrome, and my body changes yearly. You know, the shape, the way that it looks, the color of my body, and obviously facial hair. So I had to deal with all of these things as a young woman growing up, and as a teenager going through puberty at such a young age is difficult in itself. But then to have your body change in a way that is against society's beauty standards is hard as it is. I started to embrace who I am and my beard too. So I think, like I said, once you love yourself, like, you would see love in others as well. You will embrace others too. And it was hard for me, but I've realized that I love who I am, so I accept who I am. And once you do that, people's negative opinions won't affect you. They won't allow you to change, or you won't allow them to make you change, if that makes sense.
I like that. Again, who could have a problem with this?
Well, an idiot.
well, society, basically. So, you know, as we always say, as long as you're not getting anyone else's way, do whatever the hell you want.
Yeah. Sure.
Grow a beard.
Well, it's not like she's chosen. She's also got a condition in this case. So, yeah.
But people get scared when things are like this, like change. It's like, oh my gosh, you're a woman. You're not meant to have a beard. Yeah. You're meant to just whatever you can, use a bread knife if you have to, get rid of all of your hair. That's the conditioning thing.
Yes. Yeah, I kind of prefer a hairless woman, but that's just my preference.
Like, completely, it's a preference thing. Like, I look at bearded women, and I'm not turned on by that, because that's just me. It's a conditioning thing. I'm not going to say she's a less of a person, though.
And it would be very boring if everybody was the same.
But, like, you know, she doesn't have, like, stubble. She's got, like, a Hashim Amla going here.
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
Like, it's a proper beard.
I mean, look, her beard kicks a lot of men's beards. Because, you know, there are a lot of men who can't sprout, like, a single strand. She, like, her beard kicks ass.
I wonder how many women who maybe either have this condition or have a lot of facial hair naturally. Because I've heard that there are a lot of women who actually have to have their facial hair dealt with regularly. Yeah. I wonder how many hide this.
Well,
I mean, she's the only one who's come out and she's living confidently like this. I wonder how widespread this is.
But I wonder, if you were to take a poll, obviously it would be anonymous, like how many women, if this was more acceptable, would actually say, you know what, I actually want to grow this stuff. I'd love to know what, like, because there's a default setting, shave your hair, basically anything below your eyebrows.
Yes. It's that conditioning thing that you speak about. And I would imagine that there are probably a lot of women who try and control certain parts of themselves because society demands that we be a certain way. Yeah. You know, there are a lot of women who are going in and getting their upper lip waxed. And these are just women who really have like a barely there fuzz growing on their upper lip.
It's either waxed or bleaching.
Yeah.
The fuzz.
Yeah, I mean, it's barely visible, but these women go in and they have it taken care of because the expectation is, well, you know, you've got to look a certain way.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it's fine. Obviously, there are going to be different people and different people are going to expect different things and their body's going to all be different, and that's cool. I don't think that that's ever been an issue. I don't have a problem with it. I can't imagine how anyone would say you must to somebody else.
It's just going to take a long time, or it's just going to be challenging to get people out of that conditioning.
Sure, but you know how these things go. So let's say, for instance, we had that issue in schools here when black girls, obviously, they were told they must
have their hair a certain way.
Mm-hmm. And you're like, well, there was a huge drama around that. What if you were to rock up at your job as a woman? And
with a beard?
And you're like, cool, November, I'm also growing a super moustache
dickheads. Yeah.
And then I tell you what would happen. There would be an HR thing.
Yeah.
And people would be like, look, it's really offending the staff. And the clients don't like it with, you know, your moustache. But then you're just as entitled to say, yeah, well, how's that my problem?
Yeah.
I'm entitled to grow a beard or a moustache. Come at me. What are you going to do?
I'm not hurting anyone.
Yeah.
I'm not getting in the way of anything moving along. What is the actual issue
here? Well, I mean, you know, again, we are sort of a little bit different here because we don't have any problem with that. In fact, we encourage the more kind of different you are, the more likely you are to fit in here. You know, we've got Bernard, who comes in sometimes for Casper's show in full drag as Betty.
Yeah, I mean, he's been here as many times as a woman as he has been a man.
And he's great, yeah. And we love it because it makes the place interesting and colorful and exciting. But I imagine in some very stodgy corporate place. I went to a meeting yesterday at a big company office here in Sandton. And they're all walking around in suits and ties and looking very... And I walked in jeans and a T-shirt and slops. And the woman is this woman who met me at the entrance. She's like, "Wow, I wish we could dress like that here." I know she was probably being polite. What she really meant was, "You look like a slob." Mm. Who knows? I was comfortable. I was okay with it. And we've got to get off this tip of, like, if you dress a certain way, then that or you look a certain way, that's everything everyone needs to know.
Mm. Well, there was actually a documentary.
You miss out on so many things about people if you judge them like that.
More importantly, we've got to get off this tip of telling people how we think they should look.
Yeah.
Or how we think they should
exactly.
be.
But you died up, made you God.
So there was this comedian columnist in England called Shazia Mirza. And she did a documentary called Fuck Off, I'm a Hairy Woman. And that was her documentary was based on 7 months of growing her hair. and living life and seeing how it was. Because, like she said, I, like any other woman, was obsessed with hair removal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But this documentary, Fuck Off, I'm a Hairy Woman, she said, like, it was awesome. It was the most natural thing. And the really strange part about this documentary was afterwards, she received a whole load of emails from guys saying, I really prefer a hairy woman, but really? I can't ever admit that in public.
Oh. Really?
How's that for feedback, huh?
Because why can't you be seen to be preferring a hairy woman?
Because it's not the thing to do.
Yeah. If one of my friends said he preferred hairy women, we would relentlessly mock him forever.
It'd be thrown.
It'd be like, oh, okay.
That's what I was saying. It's going to take a long time for people to.
But do you not realize how stupid you actually are? Because in the 70s, that was the norm.
Mm-hmm. But I mean,
all that's happened since then is you've been conditioned to go to the opposite side. That's all that's changed.
It wasn't the norm to roll over in bed and stroke your wife's beard.
No, I'm not talking about
morning, darling.
No, I'm not talking about the beard. I'm talking about in the 70s, like a hairy genitals.
Well, that's what the word beaver.
They were completely the norm.
Came from,
and now they're not. And all that's changed is that you have been brainwashed into the opposite extreme end of the spectrum. That's all that's changed.
Okay. Yeah, look, there's the argument. Okay, is it brainwashing conditioning or is it just more attractive? Like, I'm still of the opinion, and I will gladly admit this, that I prefer the female form with no hair.
Mm-hmm.
I'm conditioned to say this. Like, I'm conditioned to like certain things because of marketing. And I think.
Oh my God, you got so excited you started smacking his microphone around.
You know, it's just like men are hairy beasts and women are like a lot prettier, softer, and more effeminate and that kind of stuff. So maybe it's conditioning, but that is a personal preference. So I'm not suddenly going to say to Daniela, like, it'd be really amazing if you could just have legs like mine.
Look, there's a lot of conditioning involved, I feel, because.
Open your ears and close your eyes, and you will have a big surprise.
If you also look at the way the trend of the female shape has changed over time, in the sense that once upon a time, boobs used to be the big deal. Now it's more about ass, and it's more, you know, it's more about thighs and curves. Mm-hmm. Like, stick thin used to be in, but now it's like, oh no, give me that hourglass shape. Like, a lot of the reason why men prefer that has to do with the way that they've been conditioned over time.
So I reckon
conditioning plays a role, is all I'm saying.
Let's give credit where it's due to goddess of the ass, Kim Kardashian, who really, she's changed the way a lot of society feels about a big ass.
Well, Seacrest has, because Seacrest put her ass on TV.
Yes, that's true. Yeah.
There's lots of women out there with big asses.
Seacrest always gets the credit.
Sure. If Seacrest had to say, okay, right, woman, you're not shaving this year, I think guys would probably change.
Well, don't the Kardashians have a lot of facial hair? I mean, someone said that they're quite hairy.
Naturally, they are hairy.
Yeah, naturally,
they've
they are hairy.
They've got gardeners and landscapers working around the clock.
No, they don't. They have that taken care of.
Is there anything appealing to you about growing your hair out? Would you love to have a beard, for example?
I would never be able to grow a beard, though.
But is there just...
Yeah, but I mean, like, put it this way.
No, this woman has a condition.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Like, so for her, it was either a case of, okay, so for the rest of my life, I'm going to dedicate time to having my facial hair removed every single time.
Mm.
Sounds to me like it's also an expensive thing. Mm-hmm. She's just decided, actually, fuck it. I'm going to let this thing grow because that's what my body does. It grows this beard. I can't grow a beard. So, like, there's just no way I'm going to grow
one. Yeah, but I mean, like, have you ever looked at, say, I mean, I've got some piss poor facial hair on my face right now. Have you ever like looked at someone and gone, it'd be kind of cool to actually rock that one summer?
I must admit, I've never thought about
facial hair. I'm a man. I'm not even jealous of people's beards. I hate beards and moustaches. They're revolting.
You know, the trick.
Revolting.
The trick with beards is some men pull it off better than others.
Well, see, then it goes back to like the fact is when you're good looking in life, you can do whatever you want.
This is the thing.
Yeah, right. See, that's...
But also...
Privilege. That's what it is.
Yeah, it is. It's
well, there's this... I don't know if you saw that very funny clip that's been going around. You know, with all these sexual harassment allegations in Hollywood, the Saturday Night Live crew did a skit where they basically... They say, if you're good looking... No one's ever going to accuse you of sexual harassment.
Oh,
if you're ugly, they will. Mm. Let me see if I can find it for you.
Yeah, Harvey Weinstein was an ugly toad of a man.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he still is, but you know, he
you're was, Bradley Cooper. You can get Bradley, away with a little more.
Yeah, I mean, Leonardo DiCaprio is not going to get all the sexual thing. It's just going to be, well, you know, he was making advances.
Yeah, Leo and I had a fun night out.
Mm-hmm.
I know that that's a generalization, but let's have a sense of humor about this and not get too carried away. And Amy Schumer put out a very revolting clip, which I'm not going to play you this morning.
Oh, what does she say?
Anyway, she's so revolting.
oh, wow.
So, Gareth, while you find that, further on to this woman facial hair thing, there was about 1,000 women who were surveyed around this. And 30% of the women said that their unwanted facial hair actually makes them suffer from clinical depression.
Really?
Oh.
Okay.
Well, that's because they feel that they are not meeting the standards of beauty.
Exactly.
Yeah. Or what beauty
well, completely.
Is.
So imagine that, like, if they were to just have a life where their facial hair actually defined them in a positive sense, just think of that. Like, depression's horrible.
Yeah, it's not great.
Well, I'm waiting to see someone with a woman with a beard walking on, like, the Victoria's Secret runway and see how
they do that.
But as many as 40% of the survey say that their facial growing abilities have affected their chances of forming any sort of long-term relationship, as in they cannot.
Okay.
Even though they are trying every single day to cut it back and do whatever they need to do, the fact that they have this condition, 40%.
Listen to this.
General Electric Films presents Sexual Harassment and You, a handy guide to workplace etiquette. Back in the old days, a workplace was a man's domain. Today, life is not as simple. Businesses are filled with working women. With corresponding breasts and vaginas. As a man, you want to have sex with all of them. But approaching a woman at work should be done with extreme caution to avoid a sexual harassment lawsuit. Here's the wrong way to approach a female coworker.
Hey, Lisa, you look pretty hot today. Maybe we should have lunch sometime.
Uh-oh, that didn't go over well. Hello, lawsuit. Now, here's the right way.
Hey, Lisa. You look pretty hot today. Maybe we should go to lunch sometime.
Oh, well, great.
How about tomorrow?
Okay.
Great. See you then.
Well done. Okay, let's review. Frank was awkward and a little too pushy. Greg was handsome. Let's see if Frank can do better with another co-worker.
Hi.
The eye contact makes her uncomfortable, and authorities are contacted. Here's what he should have done.
This guy walks in underpants.
Hey, Greg, want to have lunch sometime?
Sure. How about tomorrow?
Okay. Here's my home number.
Great.
And he puts the little piece of paper in his underpants.
See? It can be done. You can have sex with women at work without losing your job by following a few simple rules. Be handsome. Be attractive. And don't be unattractive.
Isn't that great? That's terrific. And how true is that? I mean, so often it's down to, like, if you look like Harvey Weinstein, then, you know, they're going to be embarrassed about what they've done with you.
Yep.
Do you know what I imagine it is? I imagine, in a way, it's almost as if you are offended and insulted.
That someone ugly.
An ugly person thinks that they stand a chance with me?
Right. A monster.
Are you insane? How dare you even look in my direction?
You're being inappropriate.
And then when it's obviously an attractive person, you're like, oh yeah, I am definitely worthy because I can pull attractive people.
Yes.
That's what it's about. And
Tom Brady.
And it goes both ways. Right. Men and women. It goes both ways.
Someone gets hit on by someone hideous in the office with a hunchback and a club foot and a distorted face and teeth all over the place, and, you know, just a disgusting human being.
Breath, and they, like a dying mackerel.
Right.
Yeah, cops.
Straight to the authorities.
Breath like
She just told everyone your deepest, darkest secret. You must be so embarrassed.
All right. So don't worry about the facial hair. That's the least of your worries.
Mm.
What are that? What's when a gay guy has a beard? What does that mean? A beard is a woman.
They have a fake what's girlfriend.
Oh,
basically.
Right. Okay, that's a beard.
Yeah, to cover up.
That's by the way, that's very different to the beards we've been talking about yes. the last little bit. I knew there was a term though. All right. What else is going on?
Would you like to go through some of the money mistakes that we apparently make, which are part of the factors that cost us dearly?
Let's look at that.
Oh, it's still January.
Well, and we are already broke, and we have been broke since the 1st of January. So to compile this list of some of the worst mistakes, a bunch of financial advisors were spoken to. These include Sue Tor, who is the managing director of Crew Invest. They are a financial planning consultancy. Peter Hewitt, he was 2014's financial planner of the year. Yes, they have awards for those.
Mm-hmm.
And Gareth Leonard, he is a wealth manager at Netto Invest.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go through some of these mistakes that we commit and see how many of these you do commit. So the first mistake is that most of us are not protecting our greatest asset. And before you immediately start thinking about, ooh, how am I not protecting my home or my car? No, neither of those are your greatest asset. Your greatest asset is your ability to generate income. In other words, your job is your greatest asset.
Hmm.
And according to these financial planners, we are not protecting that enough. Lose that and you may not be able to meet your current living expenses, let alone save for your retirement. And of course, that makes sense. The minute you are not able to earn an income, you are screwed.
Hmm.
Then the second mistake is investing too conservatively. Leonard says that being too conservative in your investment strategy can severely deplete the potential of your retirement savings.
So uh-huh.
It sounds like the encouragement here is go bold, go big, don't
oh, really?
Be too conservative. Well, that's according to him.
Okay.
Then, ladies, this one is particularly for you. Spending too much on your wedding.
Oh.
One yes. of the worst mistakes a couple can make
yes.
is going into debt
oh.
to pay for a dream wedding.
Terrible idea.
Expectations and costs have soared into the stratosphere and couples are starting their married lives at a disadvantage because they start out with massive debt.
Oh, yes.
Then another mistake is we succumb to greed too much when it comes to investing. Okay, you see, this is where it becomes problematic because the one guy said we're too conservative in investing. But now here they say that when it comes to investing, greed and fear are particularly dangerous emotions as well. You people need to make up your minds. Plundering your retirement savings, that is a big, big, big mistake. How often do people start dipping into their retirement savings because they need extra money for this or, you know, they were unable to make this payment that month and now they think, oh, well, let me just take out of my retirement savings. That is a big no-no.
Yeah, I know people who are doing that. I've heard horror stories in the last while about people who went on holiday at the end of last year. These are not people I know, but I've heard these from people I know. So, you know, it's hearsay. They borrowed money against things like their bond to go on a holiday.
Mm-mm.
Expensive holidays.
Mm-mm.
Oh, that's Instagram life, huh?
Jeez, I mean, that's dangerous. That is so dangerous.
If that's where you were taking money to source your holiday, then I'm sorry, you didn't deserve to go on holiday that year because clearly you couldn't afford it. You could not afford to go. Stay at home. How?
No, it's how. How is like, the only appropriate response. How? Correct. Sure.
And then wasting an inheritance is another mistake that people make. Look, not everybody gets an inheritance, but when you do, you know, most of us treat it like we've just won the lottery. We immediately think, spending, spending, spending. Suddenly I have all this money mm-hmm. that I didn't have before.
Yeah.
What am I going to buy first? Ooh, that Mark Zuckerberg yacht looks like a good mm-hmm. purchase. Big mistakes that we do with our inheritance money. We immediately start spending it instead of investing or, you know, just putting it away to
yeah,
grow.
Yeah, dummies. We got to stop doing this kind of thing. And I mean, forget, you know, I've always said I don't have any sympathy for like inheritance that goes wrong. I'm sorry. I don't feel, but you didn't earn that money anyway. I'm not going to feel sorry for you if you waste it.
And exactly what you say, if something comes easy to you, you don't see the value in it.
Yeah. All right, well, is that all the tips that you have for us this morning?
Yeah, well, those are some of the mistakes that we're making. So.
All right, that's some useful stuff there, Mubs. Thank you very much. What we're going to do in the next little while is we're going to meet the guy who is behind One Plan Insurance. His name is Michael Otten. He is only 34 years old, and he's already the co-founder of this incredibly successful business. They started it in March 2010. It's just unbelievable. He's got dogs. I mean, you were talking about pet insurance all of this week, right?
Mm.
So we speak to Michael about his dogs and also kind of how he got into this. And I think there are probably a lot of questions too. I love hearing about people who've managed to start businesses and they've really done well only in their 30s. Can you imagine?
And we also need tips.
Makes me feel like a total failure.
Oh, no.
Oh, total failure. You have no idea.
Oh, no.
No, I'm done. See, after this, I'm out of here.
Let's take a page out of Michael's book.
I'm going to walk into the sunset and you'll never see me again.
Can I play a little sad song on a violin now?
No, it's done. Anyway. All right, so we're going to be back with Michael Otten in just a couple of minutes' time. We'll take your thoughts, your calls, your messages. You know how to do that. WhatsApp 0797482090. And if you want to call us, 0861-555-189. Tell us what's going on. And don't forget Adrian Lequet and Johan van Lochrenberg a little bit later on. They're the guys who wrote that book last year about the demise of SARS. And I think it's something that everybody's still talking about. You know, Jacques Poe's book came out just after that. And people have got a lot to say about what's been happening in South Africa since then. Maybe it's not even over yet. Do you like this, Sia? I thought I'd go a little Spanish for you.
Arriba!
Alright, it's Portuguese, it's not Spanish. You like it, Mavs? No.
No.
Okay. She. What do you think, Ben? Don't you think Portuguese is a beautiful language? All right, you two are so non-committal.
You know,
don't
what?
Worry.
It's just that there are so many beautiful languages that, unfortunately, it just doesn't quite crack the podium.
No. I have no problem with the language. It's the song that I
don't like. Oh, all right.
I don't like the song.
The song sounds a bit, I don't know, creepy to me. I mean, I don't know. How handsome is this guy?
He's wearing a mask, so you don't really know.
Yeah, I mean,
it could look like Harvey Weinstein.
Feels a bit cringe.
All right, let's get into it. There's lots to talk about this morning. Oh, by the way, I got a message here from Shabnam, who was at our movie last night. She says, had a great evening at the movie premiere. Was a slightly strange movie, but enjoyable. Sia, JP, and I waiting for our shout-out. Well, there, you got it from me. So I hope that's it.
Even better.
Shout-out, so 90s.
Mm-hmm. Hey, guys.
They were cool people.
Will you make a note? We've got to find out whether that new Twitter handle of the Minister of Police is for real or not.
I'll check. He follows me.
Yes. Does he still
follow
you?
Minister Scared of Fokol or something. He's definitely... There's something.
I think his handle is still the same and his name has changed.
He's very strange.
Yeah, man. Minister of Police, Mr. Fear Forkall.
There we go.
That's his actual
Twitter handle. All right, listen, I met Michael Otten a little while ago. He's the CEO of One Plan Insurance. He's only 34 years old and he started this company in March 2010. First of all, to be 34 and CEO of a massive insurance company like this, and I know you guys are still planning to get even bigger, and there's all kinds of other stuff going on. I'm just blown away by how well you've done, and you're 34, and I've done nothing. And Mabali, don't you feel like a failure?
Always. Every day of my life.
So thanks very much, Michael. Let's start on that note.
Absolutely. Well, thank
making
you.
Making us feel horrible.
I prefer not to, but I think it's a bit of an overstatement. You've done nothing. And I'll say just 34, just to wrap it in a little bit.
But there's lots to still do, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Plenty to still do. I think at the age of the business is currently, we're still really in the infancy of what we're trying to achieve.
The insurance business in South Africa is so competitive.
Massively,
massively
so.
Competitive. When you decided this is what you wanted to do, it was probably a little less. I mean, there were, you know, there were certain opportunities that you must have seen.
Yeah.
But you could have done anything. Insurance is so hard to get into. Why did you decide to do that?
I think maybe a little bit of ignorance, Gareth, to be honest. I don't think we knew at the time. You know, sometimes it is bliss to not really know how difficult something is.
And then how soon after that did you realize, oh, wow, this is going to be tough?
I think it took a couple of years, but I think we still realize how tough it actually is. I mean, it's a continually evolving market. There's new players in the market all the time. Some particularly large players in the market who often make it quite difficult to sort of coexist.
Like gorillas in the room and you're trying to kind of fight
pretty much,
the scraps.
You're eking out your sort of safe spot. But, you know, there are ways and means to find your own place in the market. And I think that's what we try and do all the time, is how do we differentiate ourselves enough so that we can stand sort of head and shoulders above some of the larger competitors.
So are you one of those people who did really well at school? Were you a CA and then did you also do actuarial science? How did it work? How did you get into this?
Not so much. I did okay at school. I think I was sort of bribed and dragged along to actually finish it, despite many sort of arguments towards the end and demands that I was leaving, and that was it. And I wasn't really given many options.
Were you a bit of a rebel?
Not necessarily. I kind of just wanted to sit in the middle ground where I wasn't doing too well. I was kind of getting by, but I wasn't drawing too much attention to myself.
Now, I was sort of like that at school, and people said to me that means I was lazy. I thought, you know what? What's the upshot of getting 95% for maths and science and English? And
yeah.
Because so what, right? And I don't want to go to varsity and become a doctor or a...
Yeah, it was never really on my agenda. Like, there was no profession that was there. So, I mean, yeah, I got through school, did all right, went to university. Didn't really know why I was going to university, so I studied a very sort of broad degree.
Me too. I did law. I hated it.
And I did it because I was.
Mm-hmm.
Had a lot of fun doing it. Missed a lot of lectures early on a Friday morning, and we had a 6:30 accounting lecture on a Friday morning.
Now that's disgusting that they do that. But people will say, you know, these people who really have done well, and by no means am I saying you have accomplished everything you wanted to accomplish, but you're on your way there. You started this company, and that's a hard thing to do in this country, in this economy, with the market that we've got, but in the insurance industry particularly. But a lot of people will say, well, you know, the great CEOs, the founders, the people who do the things that you've already done, you can pick them up from early. You're saying that you had a pretty unremarkable start at school at the beginning of varsity. So when did it all change?
I'm not really sure. I think there was always a burning sort of question of what did I actually want to do. So because I didn't know, I did this general degree. I started my honors year,
mm-hmm.
and finally I'd achieved enough so my parents would actually let me stop studying. So halfway through honors, I said, look, absolutely, this is enough now. I'm really not learning anything. So I canned honors halfway through.
Uh-huh.
And then I had no idea what to do. So my father at the time, he was in property development, so sort of natural progression. I started doing something there. However, he did tell me that he would not let me work for him unless I could add some value, which is why only after a degree did I do that. And it was pretty scary. I mean, the first day I went to work, I didn't know how to send a fax.
There were faxes for start. Yeah.
There were faxes. That's 34. Right. There were faxes.
What's that?
It's a very old machine. Amazing. See,
it makes a funny noise and it
and you never
it
know
turns
which way to put the paper in.
Oh, yeah, so and they came in, the paper came in rolls. It was really just
shocking.
A horrible thing.
Shocking. So we did that for a while. And but during that time, you know, I learned a lot of stuff in terms of how to deal with people and what people require. It's a broad spectrum of people that you deal with in sort of construction and home development, etc. So you deal with your high net worth people who are buying expensive houses, but at the same time you deal with people who are really laying bricks. So it's a full spectrum, and I think I gained a lot of insight into our country as a whole. And during that sort
kind of
time.
What the socioeconomic makeup of
absolutely,
South Africa is.
Because you're a bit wet behind the ears when you join the workforce. You don't know
really
what's going on. You haven't really seen it. And I think to a large extent I had quite a sheltered childhood, you know.
And I suppose also when you deal with people and their houses and their properties, you're dealing with likely their biggest asset
absolutely.
That they will purchase in their lives.
Yeah.
You're dealing with their prioritization of what money they have and how much they're willing to put away for X, Y, and Z.
Absolutely.
So it gives you an idea of how much people have.
Yeah. And it's generally a large portion of what they have that they're spending.
Mm.
It's also very personal. I mean, you're in their homes. It's that kind of thing. So that was a good basis for sort of understanding where the gaps were.
And were you looking for these things or were you just learning on the job?
Well, I mean, not necessarily looking. And I think, you know, often when things go wrong is when opportunities, when you take advantage of opportunities. I mean, I think if we look at sort of 2008, that sort of period, we were coming off a major property boom.
Yeah.
So it was booming. Everyone was smiling. It was great. We came off this boom and I was kind of sitting there going, well, I'm being paid for doing very little. Because everything slowed down. You were 3, 4, 5 years away from things actually building up again. So mm-hmm. So then my brother and myself actually started talking about hold on, how do we start catering for the needs of people who have less within the insurance market? Because it's what we have in the country. We have a sort of higher net worth person who are in the formal sort of economy, formal financial institutions, well insured.
They usually have a broker,
absolutely. You know, full medical aid scheme type of cover.
Right.
The biggest issue is our government institutions can't fill the gap.
Mm-hmm.
So our public health isn't great. Our public school system isn't great.
Right.
For example. So we've got this great sort of private. Sort of country and economy that operates fantastically well. It's the best in the world, but what about the gap? And that's really where our minds started operating. There is a gap of people who are aspirational, who want to be there. There's also a gap of people who have been there, but can no longer for whatever reason. I mean, you mentioned the economy, etc.
They say that when the economy goes down, people cancel their insurance.
Yeah, it's one of the first things.
Is that what happens?
Absolutely. We see it.
Because they can't afford it, and that's got to be the thing. And
that's the thing
how dangerous is that? Because if things go wrong, then you're hit with a double whammy.
Absolutely.
You not only lose something and you don't have the insurance to get it back, but you also don't have the money that you've spent, that you would have spent on insurance.
Yeah, absolutely. We've just seen it now. I mean, we've come off the December festive seasons, and our return rate on debit orders does go up substantially.
Oh, really?
Despite our best efforts, and, you know, we offer clients different sort of options to try and plan for the year, earlier debit orders, etc., premium holidays, all sorts of things. But the reality is there's a big drop-off in numbers of covered people come February, sort of double debit time, which is scary.
Yeah. I'm fascinated, though, at how the insurance companies in South Africa manage to do as well as they do, because the market is small.
It is, very, very small.
And how many people in South Africa are insured when it comes to household, vehicle, personal? Do you have any idea?
I don't mean to shoot from the hip a little bit.
No, sure. I'm not going to hold you to this.
It's a small number of people. I think you know, in the medical scheme environment, and I speak from this because of our health insurance product, you're under the 20% mark. Quite comfortably under the 20% mark of people who are.
Wow.
Therefore, and the real scary thing comes in that if you earn a salary, you don't actually qualify for free government health. So there's a whole working population that isn't in the 20%. And if we use formal unemployment stats, I mean, we've then got sort of another 50-55% of people who just don't have access to sort of the private facilities. So, you know, insurance, motor vehicle insurance, etc. I don't know that number really at all, so I'm not even gonna put a number to it. But again, a large portion of the vehicles on our roads are underinsured or not insured at all.
Jeez, no, that's scary, because that means you smash into someone, you're gonna end up carrying the can.
Yeah, you're most likely that if somebody crashes into you as an insured person, that the person who has actually had the accident with you isn't insured. It's more probable than being the other way around.
Man. All right, but let's talk about pet insurance, because this is something that we've been discussing all week. And Ben's got a cat called Miazes who's just had health problems. You've got two dogs, right?
Yeah, correct.
So you thought about animal insurance. This is quite a new thing.
I think it's becoming...
If you'd asked someone about pet insurance 20 years ago, they would have laughed at you.
Pretty much, I reckon. I think so, yeah. well, I would have, absolutely. But it's more top of mind now, I think. And I think the reality is people are becoming more sort of financially aware of how to protect their earnings and how to protect their wealth, and taking steps from the formal financial sort of markets to say, look, well, how do I hedge myself against major financial losses? It's also, you know, it's been aided by social media, etc. So these types of products are becoming more top of mind. It's easier to reach your potential target market in a way that makes sense to them. Pet insurance has been around for a while. Just hasn't been, I don't think, aggressively marketed in terms of, you know, this actually does exist, guys. Buy it.
Yeah.
Very traditional channels have been used in the past. So I think, you know, it was never a major focus of ours.
But it can get really expensive is the point.
I mean,
any of these things where people get a surprise, those are the things that you want to take out insurance for. You don't want to end up with someone suddenly coming to you saying, oh, you're going to have to give us 8,000 rand for that.
Exactly.
That's 8 grand that you don't have.
Absolutely. And I listened into one of your shows the other day, and then there was the, you know, what price do you put on the life? And that's a horrible position to be in, and you never really want to be in that position. And that goes back to what all of our products aim to do. So we're trying to bring affordable insurance to people in a manner that suits their lifestyle. We use tech as a delivery mechanism for making it easy for somebody to access their insurable benefits. A lot of businesses use tech for the sake of it.
So you mean tech as in the front end stuff that people will interface with?
Yes.
Or do you mean the back end stuff when it comes to calculating the risk, calculating the plan, calculating the premium, all of that? Is it both?
Both. Both. I mean, I think from the consumer perspective, they don't see the back end. I mean, what they see is a slick front end that delivers what they want, sort of pretty much real time. I mean, the basis of all our products really is we've always said, give the client access to it. And our thought process might, to a lot of people, sound upside down. So on our health and our pet product, we give the client an app where they can say, log in, load a claim. Literally real time.
On an app.
Within 60 seconds, and I say 60 seconds just, you know, as a buffer. It's generally faster than that. But within 60 seconds, we'll actually load funds onto a one card for a client so they can transact in the free market with cash. So really what we've done is we've kind of said, okay, well, our clients trust us enough to give us a debit order every month.
Right.
So let's return the favor and trust them enough to say, you're going to need this cash. We're going to upfront you the cash. Just send us proof of it afterwards.
That sounds terrific. Because often there's a huge amount of paperwork.
Absolutely. So it's literally sort of a click, click.
When you're making a claim, it's not because something good has happened.
Absolutely not.
So you're not in the mood to fill in forms.
Absolutely. So the easier we can make it, you know, the more accessible we can make it, the more we can sort of penetrate the uninsured market. And I think that's what we're trying to do.
All right. Well, we'll talk a little bit about these products. What kind of dogs do you have? What are these?
I have two beagles.
Beagles.
Yeah.
Oh, the best dogs.
They're fantastic, little terrorists. I love them to pieces.
Do they? Someone said to me once, because I saw there was a beagle hanging around in the street where I live, and they're such friendly, happy, lovely dogs. They were originally, bred for hunting, but they howl, do they?
I think hunting rabbits. So they don't bark traditionally. They howl and they bay. I think.
Does that make a noise? Is that a pain?
I'd have to ask my neighbours. I mean, I'm quite fond of it, but the neighbours not so much. They are noisy. They're high energy dogs. I mean, I think they require a fair amount of attention and quite a lot of exercise. Without it, they can get quite destructive.
If you do things like pet insurance, is it important that you have people who care about animals that work with you guys?
Well, I think that's the core of what we try and get to, is that we're not really trying to make our clients a number, and we try and build sort of a family environment in our organization that everybody actually cares about our client and what we're insuring. So that's the overall thing. Does everybody love dogs in our business? No, a lot of people are still terrified of dogs in our business.
Sure.
So sometimes we bring dogs in for a visit and people stand on desks.
Yeah.
But you know, we're trying to get there, and I think it's a culture that builds over a period of time.
All right, so listen, we've got to start something fun here, and I mentioned this just the other day, but you know how people talk about some pets look like their owners or the owners look like their pets?
Sure.
So we're going to start a little competition here. We're going to put this to the test and find out who here at Cliff Central looks like their pets. So we've got a one-planned pet parade we'll be doing on the show. We'll have me with my dog, Carl. I don't think I look like him. He's much better looking than me. Ben and his cat, Meowses. Casper and the Casper Radio Show. So you've got Casper, Shemaine, Gavin, and Rion. They'll all be joining in. Kelman on Cliff Central with his dog, Chi-Chi. And we'll put the CEO of One Plan, who we've just met this morning, Michael, on to test whether he looks like Daisy and Bean, his two dogs. And you could stand the chance of winning 1,000 rand or more by voting. Just voting for the best lookalike. You could also stand a chance of winning 1,000 rand by going to cliffcentral.com and voting today. I think we'll put them up later today. Entries will close on the 31st of January. T's and C's will apply. And don't forget, when your pets need to go to the vet, the last thing you need to worry about is money. So with One Plan Pet Insurance, you can claim for a vet visit before you even see the vet. Funds are loaded onto the One card, which you could use to pay a vet bill. Ensure the health of your pets from as little as 133 rand a month. Doesn't sound like a lot.
Not.
SMS Cliff to 31644, that's CLIFF, and One Plan will call you back. So that's SMS Cliff to 31644. Right now, they'll sort it out for you. They'll call you back, make sure you give your pet safe, quality healthcare in the event of illness or an accident, and get in touch with One Plan Pet today to find out about affordable, hassle-free pet insurance. Good to meet you, Michael.
Thank you very
good
much.
To see you. Thanks for popping by this morning. I saw your office here at Buccleuch.
Yeah, that's where we are.
Very nice.
Yeah,
drove past
you.
The other day. Saw One Plan up in there. Thought, oh, okay, I know those guys.
Yeah,
cool.
That's us.
Awesome stuff. So we'll start the competition and hopefully have a lot of reasons to laugh at each other when we decide who looks the most like their pet. And we'll take those votes on cliffcentral.com starting this coming week. So stick around for that. All right, very good. It's almost 8 o'clock. We've got our interview with Adrian Lekay and Johan van Nochrenberg that we're going to replay for you. It was originally aired on the 31st of October last year when they just released their book. Since then, everything has changed at SARS. And they were the canaries in the coal mine, these guys. They were brave enough to tell the story before it happened. And that whole story will be told right here in an interview with them. Coming up next on CliffCentral.com. Let me wrap it up with the unnews for this morning. These are the things you need to know to start your day and your weekend. Are you ready? Well, Cape Town are bracing themselves for level 6B water restrictions, whatever that means. Fired, not fired, Cape Town Mayor Patricia de Lille says this next level comes with some serious lifestyle changes. Most notably, from February the 1st, Cape Townians are banned from going down on each other, and de Lille will be patrolling dark side streets and abandoned car parks herself to clamp down on this happening, even in a professional sense. The London Zoo has honored Meghan Markle by naming a newly born okapi after her. Deeply offended by this, the EFF looks set to protest at the Joburg and Pretoria zoos this weekend, saying the London Zoo will pay for this act of racism. And finally, Alexis Sanchez is set for a high-profile move to Man United. Jose Mourinho seems rather disinterested about this, though, saying he only really wants to buy him so that Arsene Wenger has even less to play with than he currently does. Mourinho is a bit of a dick like that. All right, coming up, that interview. Stick around, cliffcentral.com on a Friday. It's always busy, action-packed, and lots of stuff just waiting for you.
This is CliffCentral.com.